You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Greetings and welcome to Law of Attraction Radio Network's Quantum Leap Book Club. And I am here tonight with some of our co-hosts. Unfortunately, our host, Parisha, is traveling and teaching tonight, so the co-hosts will be handling the show. So we're going to plan on having a great time. We're just coming back off the holidays, and we are so delighted to have you join us. Tonight, the co-hosts, well, first I'll tell you what our book is. We're reading The Secret of Quantum Living by Dr. Frank Kinslow. And the co-hosts that are joining me tonight are Geraldine Dalby-Ball, an environmental biologist from Sydney, Australia, Rosemary Heyer, an English teacher that works with children in Frankfurt, Germany, Joyce Mullenhauer, doctor of naturopathy, and she is from Kingman, Arizona, Marianne Love, a clinical psychologist, and she comes from Melbourne, Australia, and Mike Dillard, who is an engineer and university professor in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And I heard that he is just like an insatiable learner also, just has to learn all the time. And I am Trina Cooper. I am a lifelong entrepreneur, and I am coming from very snowy Denver, Colorado tonight. And right now, we're working with The Secret of Quantum Living, and we just finished the first section of the book, actually. This was covering basically the idea of quantum entrainment. And Dr. Kinslow is one who has brought this forward, and we've talked about this on the show before, about how this is one of the easiest ways of actually moving yourself into pure awareness. And when we move into pure awareness, we find a place of peace and a place of contentment and a place where we don't need to be in control. And the whole first part one was about miracles and how to be happy and about thinking and thoughts and where they come from and getting to know yourself. So we greatly encourage all of our listeners to go out, buy the book. It's available from a lot of different things like Amazon and different websites. So go out and get it. Learn about quantum entrainment. This is something that will definitely change your life. This is a technique. It's so simple. In fact, the more simple that you keep it, the more successful it is. And so I don't want to get into details about that because I really want you to get out and read the book, get yourself a copy. Tonight, we're going to jump into part two, which is quantum living. And quantum living is taking this a step forward. It's taking us and moving us from this place of just learning the technique to actually applying it in our lives and how to make incredible changes and find this peace in our lives. So quantum entrainment, this portion of the book, quantum entrainment was chapters 1 through 7. So part two, this quantum living, is chapters 8 through 19. And this first part that we're going to talk about is about the mind. So basically what we're going to be doing in this particular section about the mind and about quantum living is the fact that learning this quantum entrainment becomes quite a revelation to all of us. It's something new, it's something different, and it has a huge impact. And if we want to find peace and contentment in our lives, this is something that we want to use. So many of us have been surprised. Many of us have thought there's been some very new ideas being presented to us. And basically, it supports the whole idea that the kingdom of heaven is within. And the more we go within, and the more we find that peace and contentment and let go of control, the more this pure awareness comes into our lives and helps us work through, allows us to work through many different situations that we have. And as our ego lets go and expands, and as an individual, our need for power dissolves, and we relax into this place of being a completely full human, which is a really, really interesting idea. So everything is alive with awareness. And this is something that we're going to learn how to tap into. And also the revelation that everywhere we look, pure awareness is there. There's nowhere that pure awareness is not. So the following chapters in part two, they're arranged into four sections: the mind, the body, relationships, and everything else. And so tonight we will be dealing with the mind. And I really am curious, I'm going to ask the co-hosts a little bit tonight too, because the idea here is that if it isn't easy and it isn't fun, then we aren't doing it. So I'm going to ask the co-hosts, they can just jump in for a minute and just share a little bit of their experiences before we actually dive into the chapters, or if there's something from the past section that they want to share with the listeners as well. So does anyone have something that they would like to bring forward right now?
Okay, I'm just going to sort of share a chuckle, because when I first picked up this book and read maybe three chapters, I thought, this is way too simple. It can't possibly be anything that works. Well, once I started doing the exercises, I found it did work. So I just wanted to share that personal reaction that I had.
Thank you, Joyce. And Geraldine, you had something you wanted to share?
Yeah, just being this time of new year, we often have that little moment where people check out or check in, whatever you would like to call it, to say what's working in my life and what isn't working in my life. And I think this is a really good time, and it's a particularly great chapter. So I'm happy with the timing, because it allows us to say, actually, it is okay to really look at the stuff that might be painful, might be hurtful, but it also gives us a solution that we really don't have to delve right into it and get ourselves right in the mud, but it's just a quick look, which we'll go through in this chapter. So upon reading this chapter, I've been using that as I've been looking at my New Year thing. So just something to have in our minds while we're looking at this chapter. And so perfect timing. How do we look at stuff and not run away from it, not run away from that, which is maybe not ideal. So that's been quite a powerful start.
Thank you. And, it's true, because truly embracing everything in our lives and not turning away from it is incredibly powerful. And we've talked a little bit about this in the past. But again, this time of year, as you said, is a perfect time to really look at truthfully, and that is bringing in the truth of where you are so that you can start from a really great place and being able to craft your life from this point on. I could see that Rosemarie has something that she would like to say too.
Yeah, I just really love this. I just love it, and I do it every day, and I just find it so amazing. And it is really true that the truth lies in the simplicity. You know, as Parrish has said, the truth is simple and the mind makes things complicated. And he's really focusing on, Dr. Kinsler, who wrote the book, he's really focusing on keep it simple, do less. And I agree with Joyce that there's about the simplicity, definitely, but also the speed. I mean, I didn't really trust it completely in the beginning that I was really in the pure awareness, that I was really in the you feeling. And I'm purposely using these words, maybe for new listeners, I recommend that you do read the glossary, because he speaks about pure awareness and you feeling. And Trina mentioned it already a little bit, that that you know what this is really about and what he's trying to say. And I might add to it later. So he says that in the section now, and that's really exciting too, is that we are practicing. And I practiced some of the things in this section about working with emotions, but also later some other really exciting things about the body. It is very powerful, and the speed of it is amazing. So I can also dive in maybe into the one of the first sections. And I like to also quote what he uses as a quote in the beginning, that is in the section of about emotions, about negative emotions, chapter 8. And he says that he's quoting actually Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle is one of the philosophers, how he calls him, who is actually kind of like explaining the background of this technique we are using here, or this process. And I think many of the listeners are familiar with him. So he says, the harder the mind struggles to get rid of the pain, the greater is the pain. And the word is struggle. And I don't think it's just only about the pain. It's also about the harder we struggle to do this process, the QE entrainment process, the harder it is. And the outlines in chapter 8 are, he goes more into detail, and he says that this is really what we need to keep in mind for the following chapters. And what I like about, one of the things I like about this chapter is what he says about hope. I mean, he has a lot of jewel in this book, even though it sounds so simple, as we say, but he's a very deep thinker. He thought about these things. And so he talks about hope, and I really like it because he says hope is actually not a good idea, so to speak. Hope is not being in the present. Hope is being in the future. And I thought, wow, you know, how often are we using hope, and how often do I use hope? You know, I hope you're doing well. I hope I'm going to be able to do this. And so I really thought that was a powerful thing to say, that hope moves us away from present time into the future. And that's what we like to do. Just like Geraldine says, we don't want to look at it. We don't want to face the negative emotions, and we don't want to feel it. And what I noticed is also to identify them. You know, you struggle to identify them. And he has a nice example, because one of the women he was working with who had diabetes, her negative emotion was fear. But it took her a while to identify it. And we all know, we have been working a longer time on our spiritual growth, that there is basically only fear or love. But so to identify that emotion, I think, is one of the first things. And he talks about a process to go through where we have to identify it and then actually grade it, like from 1 to 10. And always, for every practice, I use, or he says that we use the QE process. And I like to point the listeners to the book, especially chapter 3, page 65, where he extensively explains that QE process step by step. And he also speaks about the mind struggles. And the moment you are in the mind in this process, forget about it. You know, I mean, the moment you are in the mind, forget about it, literally focus back on observing. And he says that the mind struggles, but at the moment we are in the pure awareness, or in the you feeling, which basically means we are in our higher self, and we have connected to the all knowing, to the highest knowing, to the higher self. We have connected to that. And the moment we have connected to that, everything is fine. Everything happens automatically. We don't need to fix anything anymore. I don't need to work with my fear and work against it and find maybe some positive thoughts or something like that. The process is about moving into this wonderful feeling. I usually experience peace, or I would call it even maybe a joyful stillness. And the other thing, which is really important, and I'm going to finish and maybe say more later, is that I've noticed that it is really true. It is very, very still, small voice. And the mind is so loud compared to that. The thoughts are so loud. And I didn't trust it in the beginning because it's so small and subtle, you know. And grandmother has Harriet Taylor, I can't remember what Taylor had said about that. She said that it comes very subtle. And when you do the process, you think, am I really in it? I mean, did I get it? You know, and it is really about just trusting that process, doing less, keep it simple, and use the chapters to practice it. That's what I want to say so far.
Thank you, Rosemary. I'm like really excited for you with this, because I do remember your resistance to it in the beginning. And now it sounds like you've incorporated it into your life every day, and you're using it. And I'm finding myself using the practice in here more often myself than, you know, just for simple little things. And I'm finding it to be quite fascinating. And again, simple, like you said. And I think Joyce Mullenhauer had something to talk about in chapter 8 as well.
I do. What caught my attention early in this chapter, in fact, was on the first page of this chapter 8, was the word equanimity. And I may not even be pronouncing it that smoothly, but I looked it up because I really wanted to get a grasp of what this big word meant. And the definition of it is, it's a mental calmness in spite of any difficult situation you are in. Well, if there's anything in life that I would appreciate having moment by moment, that would be one thing. And some other discussions we've been having, I'm recognizing in my own self my tendency to try to escape any chance of having to deal with my negative emotions. Like I know that I have tried to run away from them, where this chapter helps us realize by observing them, we take the pain out of those emotions. And then he actually makes the statement that fear is peace. Well, I haven't got my mind totally around that, but when we go into the observation place, then that negative emotion isn't owning us anymore, and we get into pure awareness. So the common tendency that we as humans, some humans, to get on the defensive when we feel like somebody's going to criticize us or has criticized us, someone's found something wrong in what we've done, instead of going into the observation phase that this chapter talks about, we tend to get our backs up, fight back, and we have a lot of disharmony when we deal with it that way. So this word equanimity and realizing I can make fear actually be peace has definitely turned on a lot of interest for me. And that's all I'm going to share just at the moment.
Thank you so much. And that whole idea of jumping into a negative emotion is something that most of us aren't trained to do. It really is stepping back from it. And this is the complete opposite of what he's presenting right now in order to handle these negative emotions. So Geraldine Dalby-Ball in Sydney, Australia, you have something you'd like to say on this chapter too, I see.
Yes. So chapter 8, when just in the beginning where he says, okay, don't run from it. This is when we're talking about him going through the process with his friend who just found out she had diabetes and she was in fear. It's like, well, don't run from the fear. Go into it. And then, you know, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And again, it's not a long process from hearing them. They did this in a cafe. It's not about really going deep into it. And what it showed me is it's just that not moving away from it. As I mentioned, so normally we turn away from negativity. And then I looked at things that came up and saw, okay, this thing, yes, I feel a bit upset by that. And then in the book, as it says, yeah, you will, the more human you are, the humanity is having that full range of human experiences. So when I found myself angry at something, I could go, oh, great, you know, I'm feeling angry at that. And just in that moment, there's sort of a self-awareness about that. I notice that I have these emotions. And as it says in this chapter, what happens is that there's a sort of a deflation of that hardcore negative feeling. So instead of it, you know, ruminating over and over and carrying it further into the day, the likes, dislikes, just, you know, all those sorts of things, even desires, whether it be wanting to buy a block of chocolate or not. It says that this sort of shrinks down like ripples on the ocean of pure awareness. And I went, yeah, I can feel that shrinking, because when I become aware that this is me feeling a certain thing, whether I then choose to put actions in place to solve the external environment, the very first step is to solve, when I say solve, not necessarily trying to change that I felt upset or angry. I can just say, I felt angry at that. And then in the present moment, and this was a real powerful part of it, where she was saying, you know, she was talking about hope, and that line in the chapter 8 where it says, hope is something that's in the future, and by hoping you're coming out of the present moment. That was really quite powerful, because, you know, when you get a book and you're just, there'll be, and again, because I read it, but I also listen to it in audio, sometimes it's the second or third time around that something will happen before I hear it that time. So in that way, it's really good to have the book and the audio, because it's almost like it builds upon itself. And as you become ready for one bit, the next bit comes. And it's almost uncanny as well. It's like when I pick it up to reread it, it's addressing something that's just happened. And it would be like when you've observed the situation, the other part of the book, this chapter was talking about observe from the safety of self. And the safety of self was a big part of that aspect where we can be wrapped in the blanket of bliss, safe from our emotional trauma. But it's like, yeah, it's always there, and it's these things that can get put to the test. But those, and then you can have an angry outburst, but as you said, you're not in the angry outburst all the time. So when you're self-aware, call yourself the saint. And it's really about switching that, then not saying, okay, I shouldn't be upset, but I can be aware of when I am. And that really does, when you practice being aware of where you're at that particular minute, not taking it into the future more, not taking it further in the past and why, but just aware in that moment, it deflates. And I like that he used the word deflate, because you can almost feel it. You feel it and then you go, oh, deflated. So I wanted to share that about chapter 8.
Thank you. It really makes you feel like you move more into the heart and more into compassion for yourself and for the situation or another person involved or whatever. But that's a sense that I get from this deflating where you're kind of lashing out. Instead, when you bring it back in, it really comes down inside, and it does create that peaceful feeling. It's so sweet. So this chapter 8 was really healing negative emotions, and it was about how we address these and how to use these practices in working with healing negative emotions in yourself, but also with other people. And so the next chapter that we're working with tonight, and we can come back and talk a little bit more about healing the negative emotions and experiences that people have had. But now we'll move on to chapter 9. And chapter 9 is also about the mind, where emotion is kind of these negative emotions. Your mind's just rattling and chattering and stuff. Now we move into creativity and overcoming creative blocks, which, again, there's many times when in the mind where we just get stumped. And so I believe Mike Dillard is the first one who wants to talk a little bit about this chapter tonight.
This chapter was very, very interesting to me for a number of reasons, partially because pieces of it have already filtered into my head somewhere along the line over the many years that I've been trying to become a little more self-aware. And some of the things he talks about rang really true. And at the beginning of this chapter, when he starts talking about, you know, you got to go in the opposite direction. If you want to accomplish something, do nothing. You know, how many times have we heard those kind of things? I can still remember when we spent several months with Lama Tsering used to tell us, why are you doing all this activity? All you need to do is meditate, you know, and it was. So some of the things in this chapter were ringing true when he was saying, if you want to have something happen or you're trying to achieve something, do nothing. But then he goes on to explain, and it sort of started to then ring true that, you know, if you really want to be in your most creative place, well, where does creativity come from? Well, it comes from pure awareness. And that way to get into pure awareness is do nothing. So the more relaxed you are, the more you're into pure awareness, the more you're capable of pulling these creative things out of it. And that rang true for me because, you know, you get this intuition. And I always heard if you trust your intuition and act on it, you will get more intuition. It'll come more frequently and become stronger. And I really, really try to follow that. So those were a couple of things that hit me right away. The other thing that hit me very interestingly about this whole thing was I happened to be reading just recently an article about Thomas Edison, and he used what's called the creative sleep dropping technique to stimulate his creativity. And the man had like zillions of patents and stuff. So he was a super creative guy, but he studied creativity and he realized that there's a moment between when you're awake and when you're really, really relaxed before you fall asleep that's very creative. And he used to fall asleep with something in his hand. I mean, when he needed to take a break, he'd sit there with something in his hand. So as he started to fall asleep, that thing would fall on the floor, wake him up, and then he'd look at his problem again in this super creative state. Well, lo and behold, he's not the only one who did this. I found out also that Mark Twain did it, that apparently Albert Einstein did it. There's reports that Alexander the Great did it, and Salvador Dali actually had a refinement on the technique. He held a key over a metal pan, so he made sure that when he dropped it, it woke him up. So I just thought this was completely intriguing for me because it supported so much of what he was saying when he said, you've got to get into this really super relaxed, pure awareness state if you want to be the most creative. So, you know, and another thing that hit me too was I can remember when I was studying, I was in school and I was in university, and a lot of times I would be doing math problems and I would be doing crazy math problems and I would get lost and I would call my dad and my dad my dad would come in and he'd say, okay, well, explain it to me. And as I sat there explaining it to him, all of a sudden the answer popped in my head. And he would say always the same thing. Well, no problem. Call me anytime you need me. And most of the time he didn't have a clue what I was talking about because it was math that he'd never learned. But it showed me how that little piece, when you lay out everything that's going wrong in your mind, and then you get out of the way, something moves in. So a powerful chapter for me.
Pretty evident, and appreciate the emotion you brought into that because it is powerful. And when you can see it from a different perspective and a different light, and how this has been brought forward to you in so many different ways, then you begin to see how the creativity has sprung alive in your life. And that's something that's absolutely, you know, we're here to be creators, and an easy technique to bring it forward is just amazing. And we're really blessed that, you know, you were really blessed that your father had such a positive influence and such great insight for you. I think
it became a big joke after a while. It was like, I need to help come here, you know, and I would explain electric machines or something to him and be like, you know, but so
yeah, it's so simple. It's so wonderful. And yeah, I know in creativity and overcoming these blocks, I have things to share as well, but I think we'll go to Marianne Love first and let her give her perspectives on what came forward for her in this chapter.
Hi, everyone. This is Marianne from Australia. Yeah, I love this chapter because it gave us a really great process. So I thought I'd just share the process quickly just to get the mystery out of it for everybody. But I think that the challenge is in doing it and applying it yourself and making it true for you. But one of the simplest ways to do this is simply when you're wanting to be creative, you're feeling stuck, or you've got an emotion that's getting in the way, and you find yourself just getting in loops of, you know, you get agitated because you're blocked, you really want to make it happen, and you find you can't, then you simply go, close your eyes and see where you're stuck, and then you let it go, and then you bring up the quantum entrainment, you bring up the you feeling, and then you observe the you feeling. And they're saying the longer you can observe the you feeling, then the more creative, the more other, the more resolution that will naturally come forward. So sometimes you might have to stick out in the you feeling for quite a long time. It won't just necessarily happen in a minute. So just a heads up. And then he's saying, like, set a light intention. So I'd love to have a good discussion about this later, whether you set a very clear intention about what you're creating or whether you set a light intention about what you're creating. But he's saying, you know, just set a light intention about what you're creating, and then the answers will come, and they might come straight away, they might come next day. Like, but the key is that we've got to get out of the way. Like, our egos, like, really want to be in control of this somewhere. And I think that's the snags and the loops I'm finding, is like, I just want to have my own answers. And it's coming from the place where the problem's actually created half the time. And, you know, it's just about getting out of the way and allowing that quantum entrainment work to get past thought, to get to pure awareness. So, and I thought that was really interesting when he was talking about how a lot of us sit in desires and wants, and then we'll spend all day thinking about our desires. We want that, you know, fast red car, or we want that house, and we think about how we're going to get it. And he was actually saying the more disconnected you are from pure awareness, from yourself as pure awareness, the more likely you are to sit in those thoughts and desires and wants. And so the more, you know, I use the word enlightened, he doesn't, but the more enlightened you become then, like, the more in pure awareness you sit, actually those desires and wants become a lot lighter, and they become a lot more about what's helpful for others. And they still emerge, emotions still emerge, and desires and wants to still emerge. They just become like more an inclination, or more like a, you know, that'd be nice, rather than, it almost like I have to have it to solve some kind of deep suffering, you know, that I think a lot of people live with. So these are like, you know, he's talking now more about how to make this day to day, like how to include this to become more creative, become more connected, become more whole, and giving the simple exercise. And I say simple lightly, because quite frankly, I haven't quite achieved it yet, but simple in the way he's written it out sounds really simple. Like, easily just go into quantum entrainment. You're right. You're done. You know, all your problems are solved. So I'd love to have some more discussion about people's success in this later in the call.
I think there's a lot of us that were kind of feeling that way too. And I sort of had to flip my world from really being focused on the tasks and all those kinds of things, and flip it into more going into this, for lack of a better phrase, a higher space to see a bigger picture and not be so focused on the detail. And I think that was one of the things that Grandmother Parrish just shares with us, says, you know, focus on the what, not the how. Just, you know, what is it that you'd like to accomplish? And you don't have to worry about all those little details, because they come forward as they need to come forward. For me, this chapter two was really a great timing. Again, you know, we're at the first of the year, and we think about setting intentions for the year, and looking at what we'd like to create and what we'd like to accomplish over the next year. And so this was really another good chapter to read and begin to take that. I've been using it a lot, where the mind chatter starts getting in the way of things. And so I take a deep breath and I sit back and I do the quantum entrainment, just focusing on my thought and watch the thoughts go away and just let them be. And then my mind starts getting still. And it's almost like so much of my creativity or my aha ideas come through when I'm driving, or when I'm in the shower, shower mail is wonderful, where I've thought about something and then I kind of let it go just to you know, be in peace, be in kind of in quiet. And when my mind isn't so focused on what I'm trying to create, what I'm trying to do, what problem I'm trying to solve, all of a sudden it comes in. And again, with the dreams, he talks a little bit about, you know, the dreaming states and things too, being able to ask, just simply say, you know, I need a resolution to this. And I do it right in that sleep state, right when I'm half asleep, half awake, the dreaming that Mike talked about. And then I just let it go and I go to sleep. And the next morning, there's so many times I wake up with this aha, or it'll drop in the next day. And it's because it's been in my awareness that the solution I'm waiting for shows up. A long time ago, I think this, like Mike said, over the time we've had these bits and pieces, and this chapter seems to pull some of these together. And there was a story that someone had told me a while back about, well, you know how creativity or manifestation works. It's like a ball player. And if the pitcher holds on to the ball, the batter never has the opportunity to swing. So if we hang on and talk about or think about or get so engrossed in it, in controlling what we're trying to create, and we don't let it go sometimes, and just ask for that assistance, then the creator doesn't ever have a chance to send it back, or in this case, pure awareness never has a chance to hit it back to us. So this technique to me really feels like a way of letting it go and not having to control everything and putting it forward and just saying, this is what I'd like to be able to do. And then wait to see what comes back. So there were a couple of things in this chapter too. I really love the idea of a springboard action and the fact that less action, the rest piece of it, is really the springboard that kicks off the action. And so to me, the whole idea of pulling back the bow, or he gave the example of when you go to get up out of a chair, what's the first thing you do? You literally plant your feet into the floor, or you push up off the chair. So there is an activity, but there's an energy of pulling it back in order to spring it forward. And I thought that was a really interesting way of explaining. He also takes off on this whole thing on archery in this, which I thought was so funny. And I kept waiting and waiting for the end of the story to have a point. And then at the end of it, he sort of just leaves you hanging there going, oh, well, this is just what came forward when I asked for a solution to it. And it got me into this whole thing and it was really cool. And so enough of that, let's just go on. And I thought that was, it's interesting because I felt myself getting sucked into the story. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, let it go. And it was kind of a great point. So all of these, we'll go back in. I heard a couple people say there were a couple things they wanted to talk about. But for me, the creative block piece and being able to allow yourself to walk away and say, this is what I want to solve, or this is what I want to create, and then allow yourself to go sit on the couch for a minute and just focus a little bit, do some of this quantum entrainment, and then all of a sudden pop back up and go, wow, it's there. That to me was absolutely, it gave permission to not be so caught up in all of the action, but to allow it to flow through. So I loved that part. And I see that Rosemarie has a comment, so I'm going to go to her really quick here.
Yeah, I like to speak to that, to what Marianne brought up, and I agree. I mean, mind is really playing its games. I think one of the things I noticed is that mind is extremely impatient. You know, it just really wants the answer. And in the moment I get into, okay, what's the answer here to my creative block, or what's the answer? I think it can also be used to solutions of obstacles or problems or challenges we have. So what's the answer here? nothing works anymore. You know, you're out of it, you know, like grandmother says, one doubt and you out. So, and I like how he says it. And you must get the book, but he says something about just drop the attention in, just drop it in. And I think that's a good way to explain it. Like, it's not like, oh my God, what's going to be my intention here? No, this. No. Just drop it in with one or two words and just let go. And I also realized that I'm using this looking for an answer when I miss something. Maybe you do the same process, but when you have lost something, you're going to find something like your key, you know, I just let go and do something else, and then I find it. I think you all maybe experienced that. And I always say thank you when I found it, you know, so that I, you know, strengthen that kind of ability. And the other thing he says about intention is that I like it that when we are in pure awareness, we don't need to worry anymore about what's going to happen and how it's going to be, because pure awareness takes care of it. I mean, we are actually in the higher self. I mean, he defines the you feeling, and again, he need to read the glossary. He defines the you feeling as the mind recognizing the higher self. So the moment we're waiting for that feeling of peace and bliss or stillness or ecstasy or all these positive feeling, then we are actually in the higher self. The higher self comes into the forefront, our spirit, our the pure awareness, that which is connected to the one who is all things. And once we are in touch with that, there's nothing anymore we need to do, not my will, but your will. And I noticed that when when I'm in that feeling, I need to, the way I can stay in it is not going against the thoughts, but letting them just pass by and staying focused on that feeling. And it even sometimes changes or it gets stronger, and he says that's okay. Or sometimes I'm just in nothingness, in pure awareness. But the important thing is that not to go against the thoughts, because once you go against the thoughts, say, oh my God, I'm thinking again, you know, that kind of thing, you're out of it. So it's a process, as Marian says, which is simple, but also it's a process which really challenges for me the idea of surrendering, letting go, and trusting that process.
Thank you, Rosemary. And Marian, I want to go back to what your question was. Rosemary talked a little bit about intention here, and you asked to have a bit of a discussion about intention. Did you have a particular comment that you wanted to make, or something that you wanted to say about the piece about intention here?
Yeah, I did. I was curious because, like, in other writings, with other books we've reviewed, and, you know, other discussions we've had, we've spoken about how you have to get very frequency specific, and you need to, like, you know, if you want that house, detail that house, know exactly what it looks like, you know the, you know, all the details of it, and know what it feels like. And so you do that principle of downward causation through knowing all the details. And yet he's talking about more like having a light intention on it. So like, let's say you want to fix your knee problem, you know that the pain's gone away, lightly know that it's all fine, you know, whereas other schools of thought say, get a picture of a knee, visualize that knee totally clear and whole and healthy. And so I guess, you know, I was just curious, like, what are people's thoughts about that? Because they seem to me like going in a similar direction and yet quite different ways of going about it.
Anybody have a comment on that or a thought on that? Mike?
Yeah, I had a couple of comments, Marianne. I think it's a great question. And I think it's, here's what I have to say. Einstein, and this, you prompted this before when you were talking earlier, but Einstein said one time that you can't solve a problem using the same thinking that created the problem. And I think when we get too into our describing every detail of what needs to happen, we're going back onto the thinking that says we've got to break this down to its final, you know, it's like the whole reductionist approach to science. Break everything down to its smallest piece, control the smallest pieces, and we got it all worked out. It doesn't really work, and everybody's starting to realize it doesn't really work. Well, it doesn't really work in this situation either, I think, is that you kind of lose yourself getting so detailed on what you're trying to create that you lose sight of what you're really trying to create. I mean, get rid of the pain. I don't need to know all the biology of it, because frankly, I'll never know all the biology of it. Probably nobody does who's alive today. So I think sometimes you got to step back and say, let the process work, because the process works. And also, maybe there's something else going on here that's way more important than the little piece I'm trying to control. So that's kind of my look at it. And I love it when he said, you know, don't repeat the intention, because it drives me crazy when I see people praying for the same thing over and over again. It's like, what, you didn't believe God heard you the first time? You know, I think he probably did. There's something else going on. I love it in this chapter when he says to you, your answer will come, but never as expected. So lighten up, forget, you're not going to control it all, you know? And he says, if your answer did come as you expected, then you wouldn't have created anything. All you did was duplicate something that had already been created. So just the act of asking for something new that will solve your problem, a new perspective or a solution, you have to get out of the way, because everything you're thinking and using is what created the problem. Allow something new, something unique, even if you don't understand it. And believe me, as an engineer, this isn't easy to happen, because guess what? It works.
Anyone else have a thought? Thank you for that. I know for me, when I think of it as frequency specific, it's more the frequency maybe of the what. It's maybe this is what I want to create, and then leaving myself also open to whatever flows into that, and not get off on tangents that, well, I want to create this house, but it should be this or it should be that or whatever. To me, the frequency is I want to create this house, and there's some things I would love, you know, or look good, but maybe that or something better, and allowing the better to come through, or the better ideas, or the, you know, allowing the universe to bring forward, or pure awareness, as in this book, to bring forward all the really cool stuff that can flow in. So to me, it's really about frequency on that what that you want, and then allowing all the details to come in. That was a thought I had on it. Anyone else? I see Geraldine has her hand up here.
Yeah, the perspective I bring is when I'm sitting with other people who run businesses, and they have usually an absolute flood of creative process. It's not a lack of creativity that's a situation. Sometimes it's more, how do I choose? And he says here, it's about having one thing, let's say one intention, one thing clear. And it brings it around to a teaching from GMP, Grandmother Parisher, in relation to the creation of a field. And we can have a field as an energy bubble or whatever word we'd like to call it. But if we can say to ourselves, and this really ties in well with the book as well, that if I'm cleaning my teeth, let me make an intention of teeth cleaning and be fully in that, because in that way, I have also communicated to everything around me that this is what's happening. So anything that will support me in this particular endeavor, let's do it. And we were talking about business. We had a little workshop just a few days ago, and it was around intentions and what they look like. And again, people had a wide range of creativity, and they said, I just don't know exactly what one. So I was thinking there with the intention part that's being talked about here, it's allowing a step before the super frequency specific step. It's allowing the step which is in the no thing. So it's not nothing, it's allowing the no thing, because if I'm creating my next concept for the business from my existing one, from the existing one, then I will be building sort of like what Mike said, you know, when Einstein said it will be, you know, if you keep doing the same thing, you'll get the same outcome, and the same problem can't be solved with the same thinking. So in a way, going to the new feeling, going to the no thing as a step in intention allows the self-awareness, let's say, allows the people call all sorts of things, universal force, all those things. It allows things to be created from no thing. So I think that's where having the light intention, for me, when I looked at it, was a step before the super frequency specific intention, because it was allowing dropping in of things which allowed a creative clarification that I may not have otherwise had, because I was thinking too much on what to make it be. And the light intention said, hey, in this field, drop in the things that can be of assistance here. That's mine.
Thank you. I know, to me, it's super exciting to think that all the possibilities and all the potentials are in the no thing, are in pure awareness. And so when we get excited about the fact that whatever it is exists there, and we just have to open up and allow it to come through, that to me is like really, really exciting. And I feel like some of the great inventors and things just lived in that space all the time, that there, what's the next best thing that's going to come through? What's the next best thing? Rosemary, you have something.
Yeah, I'd just like to add, I'm glad you brought it up, Geraldine. I wanted to speak to that too, about the frequency. I think these are two different kind of schools or philosophies. And in my opinion, working with specifics of frequency is a lower step than working with the pure awareness. I think the pure awareness is actually the highest level, I would say, to work with. And because what it does, or what it's asking me to do, is completely reduce my identity, reduce my mind, reduce my identity, reduce my wants and wishes and hopes, and all the frequencies and all the struggling of figuring it out. I remember when work, as Mike said, when I worked with frequency specific goals, there was always, and it doesn't mean that's implied, but for me, there was always struggle in it. Oh my God, am I doing this right? Is this right? No, I should take this out. Maybe I should put this in. And so I think that the idea of reduction in the QE process, reducing my mind, reducing my will, my identity is a key. And I like to, coming also to the end of the day, I like to just point to one more thing, and that is when you work with the book and the process, the main focus, really, I understand, is to be the observer. Observe, 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 and then you move into that you feeling. And so it's a passive, kind of a passive observing, you know, and that's it.
Thank you, Rosemary. And Marianne, you had something you wanted to say too.
Just to add that, yeah, I can see the value of getting past emotions. So like if I'm creating something and I have an underlying unconscious fear that of scarcity or any particular thought that, you know, might be getting in the way of actually manifesting, because we all manifest what we put most of our emotional energy towards, conscious or unconscious. So I can see the process where you observe the feeling and tune into the you feeling, which is a much more elated, higher feeling. And then in that, resolve some of those unconscious feelings, or conscious feelings, and that in that you would manifest whatever it is that is more in line with pure consciousness. I can see totally how that would be very helpful in manifestation. Yeah, I just wanted to add that bit.
Thank you. And we're coming up, we've only got a couple more minutes left, so I'll let everybody say something that they'd like to finish up with. And I see Mike, he's ready to go. So what would you like to say, Mike?
Sometimes, I guess because I have a science background, I get a perspective on things that I think I'd like to share. One of the things that on this whole moving in the opposite direction from what you really want discussion intrigued me, because in fact, in engineering, we know that for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So if you move in one direction, you push in one direction, you automatically create a push in the other direction. And the other way to look at this, physicists call these two types of things kinetic energy and potential energy. So if I take that bowstring and I pull it out, I'm using what they call kinetic energy, action energy, if you like, to move it out. But now when I bring it out here, it's got a lot of energy. Everybody has to agree it has a lot of energy. That energy now is no longer kinetic, it's potential energy. So there's a balance in what he's saying. It makes sense scientifically. Everything he's saying makes sense scientifically. And in fact, if I wanted to create a reaction in that direction here, I could push in the other direction and that would create that reaction. So what he's saying has a real basis in science. And sometimes I think we kind of tend to overlook and think this is just like woo-woo stuff. It's not. This is really based on good stuff. So I just thought I'd throw that in.
Thank you. And Rosemary, you're next.
Yes, quickly, just from the book, chapter 9, he says, and I really like that, learn to not look for an answer. And the answer comes from the unknown. It's not something we know. So learn to not look for an answer in the process.
Thank you. And Geraldine, would you like to make a last minute comment?
Yeah, a big one that's come up, and I am using the word permission, which itself is loaded, but everything that's been said here in previous chapters, I've given myself permission for happiness in all sorts of things. Nice food, nice company, doing good stuff, because that creates more you feeling, which I can then tap into again. And I've realized that I have had in the past a tendency to say, I should be saving the world, not sailing, for example. But I've realized that sailing and being happy sailing creates a you feeling I can tap into. And then, hey, it's much easier as a full self to create and give more. So I wanted to share that because my feeling is there's a lot of people who can diminish their worthiness to enjoy things, but know that that gives you a greater pool of you feeling to draw upon. You are welcome to have a marvelous 2022.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because I think that joy really does bring the energy into the creations all the time. So, and Joyce?
With Marianne Love mentioning about the details that we put together when we do the what, I think I haven't got a full grasp, but I have kind of a feeling about it that still makes sense at one level. But what this chapter is talking about is kind of expanding that level. And the example that he gives about you're going to be traveling through a brand new city, you haven't any idea what road you want to take, you don't know where the hotels are. And instead of going through all that process, you decide, well, I'll take a cab and the cab will take me where I need to go. So the cab is what this whole process is, to have pure awareness.
Thank you for that. That's a really great, great point. And Marianne, anything you want to finish up with?
Just based, just from what Mike was saying, the opposite. So I was thinking one of the grandmother's teachings was if you want wealth to give wealth generously, give it away and then it will come back. And it just reminded me of that teaching when Mike was talking.
That's a wonderful creative one too. And we are coming up on the top of the hour. And as you can see that this book brings up a lot of discussion and a lot of different ideas and thoughts about changing. These two particular chapters had to do with the mind. And I look forward to moving into more, because the one thing I'm recognizing with this book is that it really is giving me a lot of peace and a lot of joy. And I'm looking at things differently than what I did before. So we invite you to join us and go out, get the book, The Secret of Quantum Living by Dr. Frank J. Kinslow, and come back again and listen to us again. So it's time to conclude our studies right now. And we thank you for sharing your time and energy with us. And you matter and count, and you always make a difference. We appreciate any of the input that you want to make. So you can jump on the sites and make some comments. We look forward to you being with us every week. as we make a leap to greater consciousness. So have a very powerful week, a powerful new year, and allow your light to shine, and always all good things to you. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful week.
OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.